Thank you so much for joining us, John O'Lanine, author of an amazing new book, Walking Makes Us Wiser. How are you, John?
I'm great, Greg. Great to talk to you.
Yeah, good stuff. John, what led you to writing this book first up?
Well, I think that the probably the catalyst for it at all was when my brother died as a teenager. He died in a tragic boating accident.
That was Gareth.
Yeah. He died when he was 18. And I spent a couple of years in a pretty bad state, mentally and emotionally. And I kind of started to pull myself out of that when I remembered kind of these dreams that I had as a child of being in the Himalayas. So I decided to go to India, to the Himalayas, and I went there for 1 year to go trekking, and I ended up spending 8 years there, wandering around the mountains, and that all kind of culminated in a very long solo trek that I did from Pakistan to Nepal across the Western Himalayas, 2,700 kilometers over 5 months. And what I found was when I started that walk, I was still pretty fragile. I wasn't really clicking psychologically or emotionally. And by the end of the walk, I just felt a lot stronger emotionally and psychologically. And that transition brought me to write my last book, which was about that walk and about coming to terms with the death of a loved one. It took me a very long time to write that book. It was about 12 years.
What's that book called, John?
It's called Walking, it's called Into the Heart of the Himalayas.
Okay. And that was a direct result of your 2,700K walk through the Himalayas dealing with Gareth's death. But it took you a long time to write.
It took me 12 years.
Wow.
Going back and really trying to figure out what the story was. Because honestly, I feel that I was in some form of PTSD after Gareth's death because he was such a young fellow. You know, a lot of other things kind of came together at that point, and it took me a long time to process that. Of course, the reason that I would take off on a solo walk like that through the Himalayas was really to subconsciously deal with grief. And when I finally realized that, then the book really came out in this huge rush of words and emotions. And that was a really fantastic experience writing that book after I'd understood what the story was all about. But then, you know, I was thinking more about it after the book came out, and I really wanted to know why it was that time in the Himalayas had that particular effect on me, that effect of coming to terms with my own life, coming to terms with the loss of a loved one, and coming to terms with how I could move forward, because something during that time there reinstilled my faith in humanity. And so, you know, I started investigating that, and being a writer, I've read a lot of books. And it turns out that, you know, when you think about Aristotle, Rousseau, Virginia Woolf, Dickens, you know, thinkers like Einstein, Wittgenstein, there's just a list of hundreds of writers and philosophers, politicians, businessmen, scientists, who all claim that their best thoughts came to them while they were walking.
And you mentioned you mentioned those in the book too, Jono.
Yes.
And it's a great list of achievers and thinkers, and Wordsworth too. Go on, but it's a great list of people that have obviously put thinking into their daily lives.
Yeah, so that was kind of the point where I went, well, you know, the one thing that really defined my time in the Himalayas was walking. You know, I've spent all my time there walking in the mountains, and it was such a beautiful time. And so I thought, okay, well, there's something going on there. And that's really when the research started. And at that point, you know, I knew right away from previous experience. I'd been an international level ski racer, cross-country ski racer.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that there was this a state of mind that you enter when you're training, you know, when you're running or cycling. It's called the flow state.
Right.
And that was something that the American Hungarian psychologist Mihai Csikszentmihalyi discovered back in the 70s. And so once I started to investigate flow, and especially the neuroscience behind flow, then I realized that when you're moving, when you're walking, and Csikszentmihalyi uses walking as a case study in how to achieve a flow state.
Mm-hmm.
The flow state actually is the most creative state that human beings have ever generated. And that led to another question then. So yes, walking can create this flow state, but how did this flow state evolve in humanity?
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back into evolution. And when you think about it, you know, we go back 4 million years to our very first ancestors who possibly stood up on two legs and picked a piece of fruit and then shuffled on another three steps to pick another piece of fruit. That was a point in our evolution when things changed dramatically, because all of a sudden, Ardipithecus ramidus, which was the species that probably first did this, all of a sudden had a completely different perspective on the world around them. It was a heightened perspective. It was, they were able to look into the distance. And when you start with that point of vision, that moving point of vision, all of a sudden you are looking into the future. When you look into the future, you have to start planning. So all of that stuff combined over hundreds of thousands, millions of years changes the way you think.
Mm.
So the movement up onto two legs changed the way we think, but it also changed us physiologically. Because if you think about it, all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, again, over millions of years, those forepaws that we used for locomotion transform over time into hands. And the earliest archaeological expression of human creativity that we have is stone tools.
Mm-hmm.
And how are stone tools created? Stone tools are created using hands. I mean, other animals can't create stone tools. Very few animals actually create any type of tools at all.
Mm.
Now, to create a stone tool, you need to imagine that a raw material can be transformed into a specific tool. Then you have to apply a fabrication technique onto it, learned from other makers, and then you have to be able to change the techniques in that work plan to actually create a tool that's for a specific task. Now, all of that requires an incredible amount of thinking and planning. So all of a sudden, when you have hands to create stone tools, then you have the start of really what is creativity. Now, creativity is the basis of evolution. Because when you think about it, evolution is about overcoming obstacles. You know, humanity at different points in time had to make a decision whether to fight off a saber-toothed tiger or to run across the glacier. They had to make the decision, you know, do we want to cook food? How are we going to cook food? All of these decisions have created the species that we are today.
Mm.
And actually, it's all based around creativity. And creativity, when you look at the evolution onto two legs, using two hands, is related to walking. So that's the evolutionary aspect of it.
Yes, it's incredible. I was going to ask you, John, what's so attractive about walking? And there was a list of things that, of course, are mentioned in your marvelous book, creativity, which, of course, then helps us to learn, our perception of time, mm-hmm. our strength and resilience, mm-hmm. and I guess of making sense of life and death. And they're all wrapped up in this thing of what we call walking. I know that when I go for walks, I always come back much more clear of mind, yep. and much more confident in what I have to do. It's like, I don't know what it's just, there's nothing quite like it.
Well, Greg, you know, if you could create a drug that actually mimicked what walking does for you, you'd be a billionaire. But the fact of the matter is that what walking does for us, which is, yes, increase creativity, yes, make us more confident in ourselves, because all of a sudden when you're walking, you're reconnecting with who we are as a bipedal species, and that history goes back 4 million years. Making sense of life and death, well, that's all about, again, being in touch with your story. You know, human beings live in story. You're a writer, you know that. You know, when you want to transmit ideas to people, you got to transmit them in story. You know, a whole bunch of facts and figures, people just glaze over. So we all connect to story. And what's the most basic storyline? It's moving from birth to death, point A to point B, in a single trajectory. And what is the metaphor that we all use to actually connect with that storyline? It's the journey. It's the walking journey. You know, when people are asked, you know, how do you describe your life? You know, there was a marketing firm over in the States that did this a few years ago. Asked people, well, how do you describe your life? And, you know, 60% of people automatically said journey. You know, that's the way people assess their lives. And walking is a way to come back into touch with that.
Because walking itself is a very good example of that journey, and it gives, yeah, it's something that we undertake, or those that walk in this way undertake. I guess we all walk, but which brings me, what's the difference? Would you suggest to someone walking during the shopping is doing an experience for themselves, or do you have to go out with a mindset to be actually walking?
Well, Greg, it depends what you want out of it, right?
Mm.
You know, if you want a social experience, if you want to connect with a friend, phew, that's great. Absolutely, go out for a walk together. I think you're going to have a much more intimate time walking and talking. Now, if you want to use walking as a creativity accelerator, then you've got to approach a little bit differently. You know, you have to. What I do, and I use this every day in my writing practice, is you know, I'll actually read over a section of a book or an article that I've been working on, think about some of the ideas that have been floating around in my head, and then go for a walk, you know, by myself. 20, 30, 40 minutes. And, you know, in the process of that time, I actually forget about the piece that I've been working on. And, you know, but then all of a sudden, after about 30 minutes, little bits of it start to come back to me in different forms, really obtuse words or sentences or ways of combining characters that I hadn't thought of before. And this is everyday magic. You've had that happen to you as a writer. And in fact, everybody has that, you know. And I'm not talking about just about writing, I'm talking about parenting. You know, you had an argument with the kids. What happens to me? And I go out for a walk, I'm pissed off, like, why didn't you call us? And then I go out for a walk. Slowly, over 30 minutes in, I realize, well, he's a teenager, you know, he needs a bit of freedom. And it puts things into perspective.
Totally.
That distance, it's really, it's about spaciousness. You know, and that spaciousness has neuroscientific background, but that's the output that happens when you go for a good walk. It's spaciousness.
Yeah, isn't that brilliant? It's something I remember. A couple of years ago, I was going out for the first time with this woman following the death of my wife, and we finished dinner, and we were walking down the street, and she said, well, what do you want to do now? And I was walking, and she said, oh, that's right, you just like to walk for a while. And I said, that's right, that's exactly right. So we did walk for a while, and the next thing, she's showing me her favourite butcher shop and her favourite clothes shop in her area, so it became a way of communicating. So what you said is so correct there.
And it's natural, you know. There's nothing forced about it. You know, that's the difference. One of the differences between, for example, walking and riding your bike, or, you know, going for a kayak on the lake or something like that. You know, walking is something that we all have. Something that we all connect to, something, you know, that we all have. Let's face it, you know, I remember when when my kids first learned to walk. I remember that. I remember the look on their face when they finally made that traverse from the easy chair to the coffee table. Mm-hmm. The look on their face was absolute joy, because walking is freedom. Mm. You know, walking is security, because all of a sudden you're able to transport yourself. Mm. And walking is physical creativity again. Mm. And when you combine those three, when those three concepts are locked in your subconscious, then walking becomes a metaphor. Mm. Walking is a metaphor for all of those thoughts, mm. all of those ideas. You know, I was talking to a woman just the other day, and she was telling me that, you know, she goes out for a walk or a run lunchtime at work, but she keeps her running shoes underneath the desk. And when yeah. she looks down at those running shoes, mm. she gets that feeling. She mm. gets that feeling of freedom and excitement. And that's what walking is. Walking has the ability to be a metaphor for us to be better people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, so well said, so well said. The benefits that come from walking are extraordinary in themselves. Artistically, spiritually, physically, it's a combination of all the things that make us human.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. You know, when you look at it artistically, so many artists have been, you know, have used walking in their practice. Da Vinci is another example. Michelangelo used walking. Mm. Even today, you know, walking artists, Hamish Fulton, Richard Long, people like that. Marina Abramovic, who's probably the most famous female artist in the world today, she incorporates walking in her practice. Mm. And of course, spiritually, you know, the idea of pilgrimage, you know, that is a universal concept across all religions. The idea of moving from your home environment to a place of power and then coming back to your home environment. You know, that's the Joseph Campbell's monomyth. That is the most popular story structure in the world. It's the idea of moving out of what is comfortable, putting mm-hmm. yourself into alien environments that force you to make difficult decisions, arriving at a place of power where you gain some education, gain some knowledge, and then returning to your home and transmitting that knowledge to friends, neighbors, family. And that's it. That's Star Wars. That's Indiana Jones.
Yeah, that's right.
That's video games that kids are playing today. And it's all based around a walking journey. Mm. That is the basis of it. Because we got to remember that up until 5,000 years ago, when horses were first domesticated, every journey that we ever took was on foot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, so that means about 99.99999% of human time on this planet has been on foot.
Mm.
And even up until 100 years ago, when motor cars were first invented, you know, it was still 90% of all journeys were taken on foot. Mm. So we have almost dismissed walking as a as a mode of transport.
Yep, yep, yep.
But that feeling is still there. The feeling that when we start putting one foot in front of the other, the feeling of joy, the feeling of creativity, and the feeling of security are still active within us when we start making that motion.
I'm going for a walk now.
Good. good.
You've just convince me again. I'd normally do it daily anyhow, but this is a beautiful thing. So do you get much opportunity to walk? You're in Canberra?
Yeah, no, I walk and run every day.
Yeah, it's beautiful in Canberra.
It is. No, you know, I'm originally from Canada. I married an Aussie, and, you know, here I am. And she's a Sydney sider, but we ended up down here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm fortunate to work at the National Museum here as a curator. And so the museum's right on the lake, so I get out every day, walk around the lake.
Yep.
Most mornings I go for a run out the back. There's incredible nature reserves here in Canberra. So Canberra's a great place.
Yeah, I like it that you enjoy it. It's a beautiful place to walk. I find that myself when I'm there. And I must mm-hmm. pop in and see you when I'm next in Canberra. But
yes, please do.
You like this, Jono. I have a Facebook friend, Andy Lacatry, who is in Calgary. And he used to be a chef for a well-known musician here in Australia, but he's back in Calgary. And I gave a promo for your book on Facebook the other night, And he said, it sounds absolutely wonderful, Greg. He said, I'm going out to get a copy in Calgary. So he's placed that on order. So.
Oh, fantastic. Well, my brother lives in Calgary.
Oh, wow.
It's a small world.
Wow. Yeah. My brother and I caught a bus across from Vancouver to Toronto in the 80s, and we stopped overnight in Calgary. So wonderful. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. I'll give you a call next time I'm in Canberra and hope to catch up.
Yeah. Come by for a coffee down at the museum, please, Greg.
Will do. Thanks so much for the interview, Jono.
No, that was great. Really great chatting to you, Greg.